You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to Killer Street Noise. It has been a long time since our last episode of the podcast. It's been hard to make Blackburn Rovers content, let's be honest. It's not been easy to be positive and set aside time, you know, like spare time to talk about Blackburn Rovers, because it's bad to just talk about Blackburn Rovers in the first place. So why would we want to take away our personal time to do that as well? But we set aside some time for tonight to talk about the last 2 months. It feels like a blur. I'm saying 2 months, but the last episode was actually before the Wrexham game in the Cup, so that's how long it's been. So, Lewis, how have you been since we last spoke? I say last spoke, we speak all the time, but spoke on Kidder Street Noise.
Pretty good at Parking Rovers, to be honest. Quite a lot. I've been working on Premier League darts, so over to Berlin and up to Glasgow, and had a bit of time off to celebrate a birthday as well. So yeah, but apart from Rovers, it's all pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah. Personal things are all good, but the thing that we come on here to talk about is actually awful. Well, not awful. It's not awful, is it? Yeah, it's bad, but could be worse. People say it can't be any worse, but oh, it can. It can.
So, it can't go like this, can.
Oh, it can. So yeah, like I said, Wrexham at home was the last episode we recorded. I put life was good then. We're 9 points clear of relegation. Obviously, due a big cup tie with big sold out away end. Ended up winning that game and getting a good draw against Newcastle. And then since that night, it's probably been just like a snowball effect of poor decisions and bad news, just a constant run of shit. Is that the only way I feel like I can put it? We'll start with deadline day. Does that feel like a good place to start?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, yeah, the main talking point recently has been what happened on deadline day and what followed deadline day in regards to Maguire, and we'll get onto that in a minute. But yeah, I suppose it's the only place to start, unfortunately.
I mean, the January transfer window started out okay. We obviously got Sigurdsson on a permanent deal early on. I think that was like the 3rd or 4th of Jan. Signed Chris Shenny on loan from Villa. and then towards deadline day, we're almost like worried that we're looking a bit low in numbers and could do with three or four more people in. We end up signing Billy Kamateo from Liverpool. I don't know how to say his name yet. I've not bothered learning it. I was worried with his career record, like obviously been at League Two, not played many games for his club over there, and wasn't really overexcited by him. We've still not seen a lot of him. We did see a bit of him in the Newcastle game, and I thought he looked all right. It didn't disgust me. I didn't think like he was going to like start the next game in the league, but I didn't look at him and think, oh my God, he's a stinker. I thought he grew into the game and actually probably ended the night one of the, well, I mean, they all played well, but like, you know, what other players are capable. He was the one that probably surprised me the most in how well he performed that night.
I think given the situation as well, you know, for a young player, like, a game like that, it was at a frenetic pace the whole way through. And for a young player on loan, only just joined the club, to come into that and the way he managed it, I thought he looked really solid.
Yeah. We also signed John Fleck on a short 6-month deal, as well as Carl McFadden. I wasn't disappointed with the McFadden deal, but when you look at the Coventry season they've had, they were doing really poorly at the start of the season, and then when you look at how many minutes he played, from the moment he went on the bench at like November time, they went on a mad run of like 11 games where they won 9, drawn 1, lost 1, pushed themselves up into like a playoff push. And then I think, although there's obviously a reason we're getting rid of him, he is towards the older end. I think that's how everyone speaks about how old he is. Fleck, I was a bit more excited about because I feel like he's what he needed. We're obviously getting rid of Travis. We needed someone to put them tackles in him and feel a bit of bite about him, but also a bit of experience and someone who can play as well. Obviously, with the news coming out this week that he's now injured for the rest of the season, it feels like not a waste of a signing, because obviously you don't know until they get injured, but it's hard because if you knew we were going to get injured, you'd assign someone else, but it feels like that signing has hindered us because obviously he's registered in the squad. We're now down to a 24-man squad for the rest of the season because the person who signs injured. How do you think the two free transfers have got on so far? Well, the 15 minutes Fleck plays.
Yeah. I think Bad's got off to a good start against Stoke, but since then it's almost been put into context a little bit with how bad Stoke were that day. I mean, me and you both said that's probably the worst Stoke team that we've seen ever, really. You know, they were really through that day. Since then, I don't think he's been as impressive. And Fleck, I mean, there was always a risk, you know, whilst you are bringing experience with a player in that stage of his career, that he would pick up an injury like that. And it's backfired big time, which is a real shame for us, because I thought, you know, that was, whilst there was all the chaos going on with the Maguire situation, that was something I was actually really excited about when we signed him. I thought it was a great bit of business.
Yeah. I mean, the free transfers for a reason, aren't they? I don't think even if Fleck would have stayed fit, it would have like completely solved the problems around the club. I mean, now we're going to talk about Duncan Maguire. I think even if we signed him, I still don't think it would have solved all the problems around the club. Like, he is just one man at the end of the day. He's not. I just think it would have lifted. It would have lifted the fans a bit if we'd have signed a promising striker for money. So obviously, whilst he's flying over from Mexico, where they were training, Orlando City were training, the transfer deal gets called off for whatever reason, for financial reasons in India, it gets called off. He still flies over. He goes to Sheffield to try and sort out a deal. They then turn around and say, no, they can't do the financial side of it. His agent then suggests a loan deal, which gets put through at the last minute. It all gets negotiated pretty quickly. And then, for whatever reason, the paperwork is not finalised or the registration is not finalised. We were told we would have an explanation in March. I think it's going to be the international break. Is that when Greg Broughton is scheduled to speak? I think that the club are thinking or thought that we'd be safe by then and that they could do the announcement and the explanation then and be almost like we can build for next season. I think the position we find ourselves in now is that no matter what he says in this press conference, that it's going to get received negatively because we're just not in a great... Like, it's bad enough to not be in a good place off the pitch, but to not be in a great place on the pitch as well. It's just like you're adding more fuel to the fire and the fans have already had enough as it is. So do you think they delay it? Would the sensible approach be to delay it? Although I do...
I think if they delay it, I just think it makes it worse because then they're just like... They're just pushing it back and you're thinking, like, how bad is what's gone on?
I mean, realistically, we know what's gone on, haven't we? Like, they've said they've submitted it, they've not submitted it. That we know that's happened now. They've obviously not done the announcement then because obviously things were going on with the manager, weren't in the best of form, like 2 wins and 11 or two, like something daft like that when JDT left. We've then hired a new manager, hope that he got a new manager bounce, 3 or 4 wins, we would have been like 10, 12 points clear. And then you can announce a statement and say, this happened in January, but we're willing to rectify it in the summer to start for next year. The problem is, if he does say them sort of things in this press conference, it means nothing because we don't know where we're going to be come May time when we're starting building for the summer and our squad recruitment for next year. Do you know what I mean? So would you delay? I don't even know why I'm suggesting this. Would you delay it? Would you just come out and say it and hope we win a couple of games and get the fans back on board? Like, what is the right thing to do?
I'm not sure. It's just it's a lose-lose situation for everyone, really, isn't it? Because no matter what decision they take, it's going to be met with negativity. Whether they come out, it's going to be like, and it brings all that ill feeling, which is still there really, back up from the start of February. And then, whatever they do, if they delay it, then people are just like, you're not being open enough. Which has been criticism for quite a while. No matter what we do,
it's just a lose-lose. I mean, I'm saying that I want more transparency and I want them to communicate, and we're going to get on to like the JDT out, Eustace in saga. We're literally finding out through Alan Myers, Elliot Jackson, what was happening. I don't think, as a club, that's the right way to deal with things. I think there should be like statements from the club before journalists are tweeting about the situation. So I feel like I'm contradicting myself by asking them to be more transparent and say the things that the club should be saying rather than journalists, but then also saying you should probably delay this next announcement because it's going to bring on negative feelings in a crucial relegation fight is what we're now in, basically. I mean, I'm still upset by JDT leaving / being sacked. I said at the time, I don't think any manager will get out what he got out of this squad of players. I still fully back that. The fact that he was blocked from speaking from the fans after transfer deadline day and not allowed to give like an honest reflection of what was happening. And we'll get on to John Eustace in a bit, but I feel like with JDT here, we always had that honesty and that open communication where he would tell it how it is. Like, even if it wasn't good, he would still be honest and frank with the fans and say, listen, this is happening, but we're doing this to try and sort it out, or we're like working with what we've got. Whereas I feel like John Eustace at the minute is just trying to say all the right things, but there's a difference between trying to say all the right things and it actually happening in the background. Like, you're basically just saying buzzwords and hoping people fall for it. And there will be some people that fall for it and get behind the whole together movement that he's got going on. But you can't be saying that the club and the fans need to stay together and then not telling the fans anything in the background and not building that relationship with the fans. Like, people are just going to see right through it straight away.
Yeah.
And I'm still gutted about the JDT thing, but we need to, need to move on.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are. No matter what your feelings are about in this season, with how stubborn it maybe was, there's not changing, you know, when his way of doing things wasn't getting results. There's no denying that nothing about his departure felt right. You know, it shouldn't have ended. That when you think back to the optimism of the early days and the majority of last season as well, I was convinced at one point it would be the next man to manage Rovers in the Premier League. I was it was JDT and that. And to end like that, it's just it felt like a massive anticlimax.
But do you not think with the way that John Eustace started, people have realised, you're saying he's been stubborn and the tactics weren't working. We've almost gone the opposite way with 7 defenders, 3 up front, and just pumping it to people, and we're still not getting results. So it's not like JDT was gung-ho and it was like, we're going to score 4 and if you score 3, then it's a good win. He probably wasn't the most organised, and that probably comes back to the players and his style of play. He wants to play one-touch football, and at this level, players are going to make mistakes. But the fans were on board. It was exciting. Every time we got the ball, it felt like something was going to happen. It probably didn't in the first season. First season, a lot of the goalkeepers, centre-back, but it towards that January, February time, after the World Cup, felt like he properly got it right. The cup games were amazing. And then he just needed a bit of more financial backing. And it will always come back to that. But if you look at the teams that go for playoffs and go for promotion, that's why they're up there, because they've had that financial backing and because they've improved. I've always said, to get promoted, you need to have the best players in 3 or 4 positions. You need to have players that are, that you say in that position, they're one of the top 5 in the league to achieve anything, really. And we've probably got Smodic this season. There's probably the best centre forward. You'd put him in that category in a league. Joe Rank and Costello, when he's fit, probably put him in that.
Yeah.
Right back centre mid.
When he's not playing,
yeah.
I think.
Tronstad, I could try my best to argue that he'd be in the top 5, but it'd be a difficult argument. Adam Wharton would have been one of the arguments for that. But the problem with the rest of them is that not only they're just average in a position, in some positions we've probably got some of the worst. Statistically, both our goalkeepers are some of the worst in the Championship, and every game we're pointing at mistakes they've made. We'll cover the Swansea game and the Millwall game. I know Moran gave the ball away for both goals on Saturday against Swansea, but I still feel like Pers can deal with both of them. And then last night against Millwall, I think Wolstead should probably sit. I know it's poor to give the ball away and Fads dives in, but I still think a good goalkeeper saves both.
I think if he stands up, he gives himself a better chance.
Yeah.
Hanzo, if he stands up, probably it's been, it's in square it for it.
It's hit Blackman badge.
Yeah. It was good last time.
Yeah.
I thought.
It's, I mean, I'm going to go on to John Eustace now, because I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt to begin with, because I feel like the games we had when he first came in were quite tough to like come in and get a hold of the squad and get a result out of. Like, travelling away is always going to be difficult. That's fair enough. There was nothing about last night where I thought, you know what, five at the back is the right formation to play. In the first half, I didn't see Millwall do anything with the ball to think, you know what, yeah, five at the back. I can understand that. Centre-backs have got the wingers, you can push full-backs on. I don't think Pickering or Britton got... I think Britton got two crosses in. That's all I can remember in the first half. And one was to Gallagher, which headed away for some reason. And I just... Like, Millwall at home, no offence to Millwall, like, no disrespect to Millwall, but he should have been looking at that game when he first came in. He should have been looking at this week, where we're playing Swansea, a relegation rival, who were down there, Millwall and Plymouth, as like, right, that's the week to get myself a couple of wins, possibly a point on the road at a difficult place to go, and cement myself as, like, give people to have some confidence in me. But almost the opposite has happened, because the way he's approached all three, well, I don't know about the Plymouth game yet, but the way he's approached the first two games, it's almost done the opposite. Like, if you can't get a minimum of 3 points from them two games, how does the rest of the season look? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I didn't go last night. I'm down in Hemel at the minute. I watched it on telly, but... For me, it was genuinely hard to be interested watching it.
You put a watch on instead, didn't you?
I was like, I watched it like 15 minutes into the game. So, it was really tough last night, I thought. And the five at the back needs to go. So if you keep going with it, I just can't see us. But I couldn't see a scoring last night. We wouldn't have scored if we hadn't been gifted it, to be honest.
Yeah, it was a gift from Millwall. It wasn't a well-worked goal from us at all.
And to be honest, last night I was left with the feeling that I can't see us win again this season.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy that we've got the league's top scorer, and I don't think we created a clear-cut chance for him apart from the goal that Millwall gifted us last night. I don't remember him getting slipped in or a ball over the top at any point last night where I thought Smodic is in here. And I mean, it's more difficult when, like, obviously Millwall came and sat back and they were deep and there were no space to run in behind. But then surely people like Dolan's going to like drop into the gap, bring the centre back out and then play the ball. The problem is, like, we're getting players in that gap, like Dolan and Gallagher are getting on the half turn in the 10 position. Smodic is making the run, and then them two aren't capable of playing the pass through to him. So the amount of, I know, like, he throws his arms up in the air quite a lot, Smodic, when the ball doesn't come, but it must be frustrating constantly. Like, he must feel in the back of his head every time he makes that run, I don't back this guy to find me. Like,
yeah. So people might think what I've just said is a bit extreme, because it sounds it, I know, but because what we've got, like 10, 11 games now?
10 games.
I think 10 games. So, on Saturday and Sheffield Wednesday, they're the only two I think. I look at and think, maybe.
Chef Wednesday are on fire at the minute. 1-5 out of the last six.
And that's a problem in itself. I mean, games like Leeds away, Leicester away, pretty much every away game, you're just like...
Southampton at home, Ipswich at home.
You can't see it.
No.
You can't see us beating those teams. So what are we going to do?
I mean, I put here that relegation is looming, and that's being... And the thing is, even if we do stay up, what is the goal next term? Because you're going to lose more out-of-contract players. Gallagher's out of contracts. Fads and Fleck are out of contract. You're going to replace them with even more frees. You've got players like Talovic on three-year contracts that you're not going to be able to get rid of because, well, who's going to come in for him? I mean, we're lucky with Nalanis that Stoke could take him off our hands, but I don't think there's another club that'll be taking Samir off us. And then you need to build a squad to not... Well, they could try and keep you up again next season, but is that the aim? Constantly, like, to stay up in the Championship? Are we the team that finishes 21st and that's our goal? Is that the future of Blackburn Rovers?
It's a pretty miserable existence, isn't it? We hope not, but, you know, as you say, the players that are going to leave, and there's a big question, you know, over the finances. I know the situation with Venkis and the money going through, the transfer of the funds being approved by the courts. That's, is it next week? Is it the 10th?
Yeah, Saturday,
isn't
it?
Was it this week?
Yeah, it's this Saturday.
10th. Yeah.
Or Sunday.
So, Sunday. Sunday 10th. Yeah.
Court open on a Sunday.
I know, yeah. Well, that's going to be a big thing when it comes to summer. Yeah, I saw someone pose a question recently of, will they say, oh, now the club's got this Adam Wharton money, why do you need to send the money over?
Another 10 million.
Why is that? You know, why is that necessary? And then if that money doesn't come over, what happens then? Because that Wharton money will only... And that's pretty... We said it last time we... In the last episode. The fact that the Wharton money is just going to, you know, pay the bills, keep the lights on. You know, that generational talent that you put years into, and that's what, you know, the club existing for a few months, that's what you're getting from it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, 22 million, like, you look at the sale of Jokeres from Coventry, obviously reinvested that money. Ellis Sims got a hat-trick, first half hat-trick last night, perfect hat-trick. And we were going to reinvest it on keeping the club shop website ticking over. And it's just like 20 million in for a Championship teams. It's like a golden egg, in it. Like, you're using that to build your team for a playoff push, and like, hopefully, but like, I mean, do you even trust our recruitment team with the £20 million they've been given? I know they've had slim pickings so far in terms of finances, but I don't really think a Tronstad that's been a fine where I think, yeah, like, these lads have got their heads screwed on. Wallstead's, I've already talked about our two goalkeepers being the worst in the league. Sigurdsson, he's been all right, but I imagine that a player, I thought when we signed him, that a player of his quality would have torn the Championship apart and would have looked at the Championship and thought, this is my chance to get 25, 30 goals and get a move to back to Champions League football. Not, I'm going to score 8 and then I'll be stuck at Blackburn next year.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just sick of this propaganda. We need the fans to be together. We need the club and the fans. Like, we need to support the boys, get behind the team. And, like, the club aren't proving that. Like, we've got a crucial game on Saturday. Like, £25. Like, if you need the fans, prove it. Make it Kids for a Quid. Make it a fire at Riverside. Make it, like, give the Rovers fans the Darwin end and make it as cheap as possible. Do something. But I mean, they tied their own hands behind the back by doing this £95 for the last 5 games, so I don't think it will be cheap.
Which everyone's buzzing about.
Oh yeah, I'm sure they sold about 40 of them. I mean, we spoke about if you stay up, what next? Now let's talk about the other side of it. if we go down, is the team good enough to come back up? Well, I say, is the team currently, I think, is good enough to come back up. The problem is, who stays to take us back up? So one of the two goalkeepers will stay. I don't know which one, but I can't see any of them getting a move.
Hopefully, Percy's thing. if one of them is going to stay, it'd be Percy. But
Pickering goes for me.
Yeah, Britain.
I think Britain goes. Another championship club takes a punt on him. Hyam goes. Fadder's out of contract. Scott Wharton maybe stays. Maybe.
Carter will stay, I think.
I think Carter will go. Carter's had interest in this January. I think he'll go if we go down. Midfielders, you've got Garrett.
Garrett will probably stay.
Yeah. Tronstadt goes. Travis goes. Buckley potentially goes.
What have you got left?
I know. Yeah. You've got Garrett and Ryan Steele and myself at left back. I mean, it'd be relying on Academy products again, won't it? And it almost reminds me when Bolton went down and they were having financial troubles and they literally played like the youngest ever team in League One and obviously went down to League Two as well. It's scary. I mean, the team that went down last time obviously got 51 points. I thought they were quite unlucky to go down that season.
Definitely.
Under Mowbray, we did well to keep a lot of the players, but we also signed quite well. And I did say that to get promoted to achieve things in the league, you probably need the best players in that position or the top five players in that position. If you look back at that League One team, we probably had one of the best centre backs in Charlie Mulgrew. Richie Smallwood, probably one of the best centre mids. Corey Evans was up there in League One. Adam Armstrong, Danny Graham, Bradley Dack. Who else was still there?
Well, that level all over the pitch, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you could argue like in every position, we probably had some of the best in the league that season. It's not going to be the case if we go down and we start with that squad. Next season, we'd have to sign 10, 12 players.
Probably more.
But even if we stay up, we need to sign 10, 12 players. And with the financial cloud that's hanging over our head, I just can't see.
Yeah, with that cloud, what standard are those players going to be? That's what I worry about. And how much of this Adam Wharton money is actually going to be able to be spent?
Yeah. We both watched the game last night on Rovers TV. What did you think of the commentary on Rovers TV?
I'm not saying
I mean, I don't want to criticise people because I've never actually been there. And like under pressure, you can say the wrong things all the time.
It is a hard thing to do. Yeah. I've done it myself. And it's not as easy as people think.
No, I can imagine. But Warren Lucy, after Millwall went 1-0 up last night, telling me, the viewer, that we need to score two goals now to win this, that is not acceptable. Don't care what anyone says. If we're 1-0 down and you have to tell me that we need to score two to win, then I'm turning off. I'm putting the Millwall channel on because... And then what else did he say? The other week it was the Cardiff game. So the Cardiff game, what's the main commentator called?
Neil
Yardley. So he said tonight it's been a bit of a slow burner. Obviously it was 0-0, no shots on target from both teams. And Warren then said, more like a microwave. To which Neil replied, well, doesn't that cook food quite fast? To which Warren replied, yeah, I know what you mean. So it'd be more like something that cooks things slowly. And it just went quiet for a minute. And I don't know whether it went quiet because my brain was bleeding, or it went quiet because it stopped talking. Because I just wanted to smash my head off the brick wall. It makes me cry. And then last night, for him to say in the 80th minute, it's not been a bad game. I mean, you paid to watch it, commentators, so for you, probably not. No, it hasn't been a bad game, but for anyone that's paid to watch it, anyone that's down at Ewood, it's been a fucking awful game. Let's be blunt about it.
What do you think? Just remind me then when we're talking about Hyam, when we were mentioning the players that, you know, will like go and stay if we go down, you know, just go and stay in general, you know, in the summer. What do you think about Hyam last night? Doing what he did to the Riverside, you know, turning Riverside to calm down in what, the 94th minute when we're drawing 1-1 to Millwall and relegation.
So I looked at the clock. Someone put it on Twitter, and I watched the video again, and the time was 94:19. So like, there's 40 seconds left on the clock. He's like walked out of defence. There's a ball on down the line. He's chose to go back to McFadden, who's then going to pass it back to him at best. But I mean, when he turned around to Riverside to give a bit of mouth verbal back to the fans, he's then not an option for McFadden. So it's almost like McFadden has to go to Scott Wharton then. So I can understand at full time him having a go and saying like, calm down, like get off people's backs and whatever. But during a game when you've just played a blind pass back inside, left him no option. If Millwall were clever about it, they could have blocked off the pass to Wharton and probably snatched the ball and potentially had a chance in the last minute. I mean, I don't want him to just start pumping balls like long diags to... I don't think the frustration from the fans was just that moment of the game. There was like constant moments of no urgency where like taking throw-ins and like Hyam's picking the ball up, and instead of just like whipping one into Yari's feet and like doing a quick feet and back, he's like dropping the ball for Britton to run back 20 yards to take the throw-in.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if Britton just stands where he is, then just like throw the ball into Britton, do a feet and back, and you've got space then. There was a corner later on where we passed the ball out of place somehow. I still don't know how he managed to do that. And I just, like, there were moments in the second half where Millwall had like a good spell just after we equalised. Like, after we equalised, we were all right for 5 minutes, and then they had a couple of attacks where they got the ball at left back, played a couple of triangles around us and got in behind. I don't think it actually led to like a shot on target, but there were one where Walster had the ball at his feet and McFadden like shouting at him to like speed it up. And I just thought like, that's quite good game management from Walster. He's still on the ball. He's going to wait for a Millwall player to press him and then play it to one of the centre-backs. But the way McFadden were like shouting at him were almost like, come on, like, get rid of it. And I was a bit like, well, we've tried that for 70 minutes against Millwall. We've got Liam Cooper and... Not Liam Cooper, what's he called? What's the massive 6'8" centre-back called that won every header last night? Was it Liam Cooper? Is it Cooper from Leeds?
Jake Cooper.
Like 6'7", won every header, and like he's shouting at him to kick it long to him as soon as possible. I just found it a bit strange. I thought, apart from the goal, I thought Walstead did all right last night. Came out, like collected some balls over the top quite early on, and that was good with his kicking. I don't think there were one goal kick or pass out the back there. I thought, oh, that's a bit risky. Did everything simple and did everything right, and yeah, it was just a weird moment. But to have that urgency when the keeper's got it, but then when you've got it on the halfway line a minute ago, tell fans to calm down when they're obviously voicing the frustration. And obviously they had the meet. Well, speaking to Matt tonight at 6, he said they had the meeting where they were complaining about the atmosphere, they don't like being booed and all this lot. And it's like, well, yeah, but the fans don't like watching us like draw at home to Millwall when we need a big 3 points. And I just think there has to be some understanding from the players as well. Like, if the players aren't going to be honest and tell us what's going on in the background, or like tell us the problem that's going on and just pretend that we're all together and it's all hunky dory, then when you're playing crap, you're going to get abuse off the fans, because the fans can't see another reason for it unless there is trouble in the background, which you're not willing to talk about.
Yeah.
So, yeah, did you see it, his reaction? What did you think?
I didn't actually see it in real time. I missed it in real, but I did see the video on Twitter today. I'm just like, I just think it's just not right. It just didn't sit right with me at all. You know, last night's result, it's not good enough. Throwing 1-1 at home to Millwall.
A great point, especially John Eustace said.
Definitely not.
I mean, it's a great point in May if you stay up. It's a great point then, but yeah, currently it looks like a 2 points dropped.
You're a darn goal difference. We dropped 2 points on to Millwall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't sit right. Right, let's cheer up for 5 minutes. Let's see if that's what. So we'll talk about the commentary from last night and other Rovers TV games. So we're bringing back top five, which we've not done for loads of episodes. I think the last one was like top five biscuits after the Burnley game last season. So I've gone for the top five most iconic commentaries. So I've got my list of five.
Like commentary moments.
Commentary moments, yeah. And it's just your opinion on what the most iconic. So have you got a list of five?
I've got five, yeah.
Yeah, so I'll let you go first.
So in fit, I had to pick a Rovers one.
Yeah.
So I went for Martin Tyler at Anfield, and this is like the line that always like sticks in my head from like watching like Premier League years and all of like the various like clips of Rovers winning the league. Especially that, let me say it once again, Blackburn Rovers are the champions.
Yeah.
So I went for that line in fifth. What's your spot?
No, I'll let you do your top five, because mine on, I can already tell mine aren't as serious as yours.
Aren't serious?
Yeah.
That's what I should have picked now.
Going off your number five, I think I always think about Andy Gray like being like, and that row for the Blackburn fans tells you it's all over the Upton Park. It tells you.
In fourth, I've gone for one from Matty, John Watson, and it's the Ronnie Radford goal in the FA Cup. It's been inside. Probably not for, I mean, it's, you know, a long time before our time, but so it's like an iconic commentator, and that's probably what started it all for him.
Yeah.
So that's why I've gone for that. And then third, because this is like, I feel like it gets quoted all the time now, and it's Andy Gray, the Gerrard goal against Olympiacos.
Oh, yeah.
Gerrard!
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, beauty!
What a hat, son.
Everyone like quotes it still now.
Yeah.
It was like so simple. It was like a natural, you know, like you think that more and more commentary these days is like
scripted.
Thought of before.
Yeah.
Whereas like, yeah.
Peter Drury. He's got his poems written down before he goes on. And I guarantee at full time, if the person doesn't score that he's wrote a verse about, he's absolutely fuming. Absolutely fuming.
I feel like that was just like a natural reaction once that goal went in. It was just like the emotion of the moment. It was just,
well, that's how every football fan reacted to that goal, probably, unless like you're an Everton or United fan. Like, you probably reacted to that in the exact same way. But that's how that's how I think commentary should be.
In second, I've gone for the Aguero moment.
you know.
Yeah, you roll your eyes, but
it's sort of such a basic answer, isn't it?
It is.
It's a vanilla latte from Starbucks, that. Yeah.
It is probably like the.
It's probably the most. Well, the one that everyone thinks about when they think of like the Premier League or like commentary in general. Yeah. They think about the Aguero moment.
And then, I mean, it could only be one. They think it's all over. It's been tops. But you say, you're Scottish, you won't understand. But
won't understand, like you were there with bloody flat cap on. You won't understand how they're a bit really round box telly. There's people on the pitch.
That's my list. What's yours?
So I've gone for my most iconic. So the ones that I use or refer to quite a lot. So I've got number five. I've got, what's the goalie doing, Tam? What's the goalie doing? One that can be used every week watching Blackburn Rovers. Number four is Harvey Barnes, always equaliser. Number three, I've got Jeezy Peeps, man. Jeezy Peeps. Number two, I don't think this is as famous as the other ones, but do you remember when Newcastle played Watford and they kept missing chances? I think St. Maxim misses an open net and then Jacob Murphy goes up the other end. And like he goes through one-on-one, he tries to lob the keeper and just chips it into the keeper's hand. And the commentator goes, oh, just put it in the net, man. screaming at the telly. I just think like, that's what I want commentary to be. I want a Rovers fan to be like, oh my God, just put it in, like, just score. Like, so basic. I don't want like Warren Lucy telling me it's not been a bad game. I want someone to be like, oh my God, just kick it me right foot, man. Just like a natural reaction. And then number one, I picked an actual serious one for this, and it's the Dennis Bergkamp one against Argentina in the 94 World Cup in the USA. Like, Dennis Bergkamp. Like, he literally like starts screaming towards the end. Yeah, so probably not iconic in terms of football, but the ones that I always think about and the ones that I use all the time. Harvey Barnes is an absolute belter.
When you said that, like, less serious ones, like the one that I thought of immediately was the rugby commentator.
Oh, have you got any bottle? You're walking.
You bottle.
What other ones have they been like that? I still think the Newcastle one's my favourite one. Oh, just put it in the net, man. Like these players like playing at high intensity, like in the Premier League, top of the game. There's like a fat Geordie commentary move, like, just put it in the net, man. Right, so let's look at the league table. So currently 17 on 40 points. QPR are losing. I know they went down to 18th when they went 1-0 up. Is it still 1-0 or 2-1? West Brom turned it round quite quickly. It might be 2-1 now. Still 2-1. Huddersfield are currently losing in the last minute, so that's good for us. Millwall on 40, Plymouth on 40 that we play on Saturday, Birmingham 39, QPR, Huddersfield, Stoke and Sheffield Wednesday on 38. Now, you probably look at that and probably think it's not that bad, but I looked at Rotherham's fixtures earlier. So they play Huddersfield at home on the 16th. They then play Millwall at home on the 1st of April. They play Plymouth at home on the 6th of April. Swansea were in around there. They also play Birmingham. And they finish with Bristol City and Rotherham, so that won't really matter. Rotherham have won 3 games all season. They've only drawn 10. They've lost the last 5. So you can almost count the teams that they've yet to play as having like an extra point or potential 3 points that we're not going to get because we've already played Rotherham twice this season, where we drew 2-2 both times, which is just shocking. Rotherham could also potentially be down by the time they play. How many points, can they still get 30, still get 49, so 3 games until they could be technically written out of it. So that'll be before they play Plymouth, before they play Swansea, before they play Birmingham. So yeah, worrying times when our relegation rivals have got games like that where they should really be winning. And like you said earlier, the probably only 2 games that we look at that we should be winning are the Plymouth this Saturday and the Chef Wednesday game later on in the season. I'm going to go through the last our last fixtures, and I want you to tell me how many points and where we're going to get them from. So Plymouth at home, Middlesbrough away, Ipswich at home, Sunderland away, Southampton at home, Bristol City away, Leeds away, Chef Wednesday at home, Coventry at home, and then finishing at Leicester away. So out of them 10 games, how many points can you realistically see us getting?
Less than 10.
Do you think 10 will be enough to stay up?
I can't put a specific number in, because, like, if I'm honest, I just have... I know it sounds really bad, and roll meant, like, back roll is not a lot, but I just have absolutely no confidence in them whatsoever. They meant to, under this setup, this part of the park, I said it already, I can't see his win.
No. I mean, Middlesbrough in bad form and only 4 points above us. It'd just be typical of them to sack Carrick, hire a new manager, and then beat us in their first game. Ipswich, I can see them coming and trouncing us, to be honest. 1-5 on the bounce. Always scoring last minute. They've got that character about them. We've got shit all in terms of character. Sunderland away. Remember the last time we beat Sunderland away? I mean, they've lost 5 on the bounce. They're in awful form, but even if they'd lost 15 on the bounce, would I still be confident of us going to Stadium Light and getting a win? Probably not.
Last time we won at Sunderland was 2008.
Beating 1-0 with Benny McCarthy. It
says here 2-1. Guys, flash score, it doesn't say who the scorers are. That was the League Cup as well, wasn't it, in the league? Oh, my God. All right. 2006, Stephen Reid.
Yeah.
I think that's it, in the league.
And Southampton at home, can't see us winning that. Bristol City away, they're on a bit of bad form. We are playing people at the right time to play them, it's just they're also playing us at the right time to play us. And we need wins, draws, unfortunately, won't be enough. And even though, like, we've got 4 draws in our last 5, without them draws, like, even without 2 of them, we'd be in the relegation zone, more or less. So, worrying times. Leeds away, again, can't see it. They'll be pushing for promotion around that time. You've got to hope that either Chef Wednesday are safe, Coventry can't get playoffs, and Leicester are already champions by that point, to try and hope to get anything out of the last 3 games, I think. Because if it comes down to it where Chef Wednesday are still fighting for their lives, I can only see them getting a result. Coventry, if they need a win to get in playoffs, I can see them beating us, and then Leicester, I mean, they've dropped off a bit, but still top of the league. It's just hopefully they'll have it wrapped up, ready for when we turn up, and we can just snatch a point before they lift the trophy.
You can't see that, haven't you? Can you, like, why would Leicester not want to put on a show? It's probably going to be their title fight if they carry on.
Yeah.
Like, they haven't, I know they dropped off a bit recently, but I can't see them pulling away to the point where they won't win the league. Why would they not want to put on a show when it's their title party?
You just got to hope that the already on the beach.
You've got to hope that we're already safe, I think, going into that. Yeah. I don't think anything there, but there's some other tough games before then, so will we be already safe?
You have to hope that the teams below us go on an awful run of form, because Huddersfield, 2 wins and a draw in the last 5, QPR 3 on the bounce, and then obviously losing tonight currently. Sheffield United, 5 wins in the last 6. They all seem to be getting wins from somewhere. Millwall, unbeaten in the last 3, 2 wins and a draw against us. Worrying times. I think Plymouth will do enough with the home form towards the end of the season, but our home form's been our downfall this season. We've let ourselves down, considering how good we were at home last season. It's actually shocking how bad we've been at home this season. So, have you got any more notes before we finish this hour of cleansing? Soul cleansing.
I think so. I think I've basically covered everything that I wanted to say. Needed to say.
We need more transparency for people in the club. I saw the We Are the Rovers newsletter today, where they mentioned that the club were going to communicate the season ticket prices with them and the plans for season tickets this month before they send it out to India for approval. I'm just hoping and praying that the We Are the Rovers trust have the best intentions for the fans, because speaking to the people that were at the fans meeting with the Waggett and the players, not naming any names, but some of them don't have the same views on having affordable tickets. They're still under the impression that if the cheaper won't sell twice as many and won't sell enough to make what we're currently making. So that's the only worry that people fall for, the lies and the deception that we need to price it this much because we're losing that much money. Because just talking about QPR, their season tickets are £219 for the season. Obviously Loftus Road doesn't hold, I think it holds 18,000 when it's full. Might be just a bit more. The wage bill is higher than ours, and their last financial accounts losses £20 million a year. So if we're selling season tickets at double the amount and still losing the same amount of money, and our wage bill is lower, I don't know. It's just things just aren't adding up. But who am I? I'm not an accountant. I'm just a sad Blackburn Rovers fan. So, I'm going on holiday on Saturday, so I won't miss the game. I'll probably watch it over there, but I won't be able to speak about what happens Saturday. And then, have we got a midweek game, or is it Middlesbrough then, the international break?
It's straight to Middlesbrough, thank you.
Straight to Borough, then 2 weeks off. Thank God. We need it.
England, Brazil, in the international break.
Yeah. How much is it, a ticket?
£25.
England, Brazil for £25 or Blackburn, Plymouth? Bingo. Oh, would you rather go to Wembley and watch England and Brazil, or would you rather go to the green, musty, damp Ewood Park and watch Dom Higham shout at the fans when we get beat 1-0 off Plymouth? And that's where we'll end the podcast for tonight. We'll let you think about that, what you'd rather do. Alright, we'll be back. Will we be back? That's the question.
At some point.
Yeah, we'll be back for the League One preview in June.
Whether it's a second or a third tier podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to start shouting at have to stop shouting at thingy, Ryan Dilks, because no longer we've been covered by him. Right, thank you very much everyone for watching and listening, and we'll hopefully see you back soon to talk about better things, bigger and better things, but who knows? We'll see you in a bit.
In a bit.
Podcast Network.